Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group, and this is Corinne, and I'm so glad you are here. Let's do as we always do and begin our study group time with a brief period of coming into stillness. Turning attention from without to within. Allowing your mind to come into that quiet, still space that we all share. And if it doesn't feel immediately accessible, the only thing that matters is your willingness. Connecting with your willingness and offering your willingness to Holy Spirit. This is your willingness to loose the world from all you thought it was. This is your willingness to be responsible. And this is your willingness to see differently. Knowing that truth does not hide. Love is. And that choice to be a witness to truth is ours. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that the Holy Spirit gives, and we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. I just have to repeat, I feel so giggly now because, and I'll have to just repeat it now for everybody on the recording who wasn't present before we started recording. I was sharing a really quick story. My husband was away with some friends in Montreal for the weekend at an Airbnb, and Rob was sharing a room with his friend. They're actually sharing a bed, and the fire alarms went off in the building, and they were blaring loud, and Rob said that his friend John woke up with just, you know, he was in such a deep sleep and so confused and with this utter look of terror. And my husband thought he was going to get, like, that John was going to, like, punch him. Like, he had his, like, fist cocked. And I was just laughing. I had the best belly laugh before we started recording. But when I just shared this before the recording started, Paul, could you just repeat what you said? Because I just have a feeling that I'm going to be referencing this in the future.
Yeah, it just popped in my mind. I was like, well, that's why we have the course, so the Holy Spirit doesn't wake us up like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a gentle process. It is a gentle process, not being hurled into reality so we're frightened and terrified. It's not like that at all. So, yes, that's why we have the Holy Spirit. And thank you, Paul. I just have a feeling I'm not going to ever let that go, and I'll probably reference it again. So let's just get it on.
It really works.
There we go. Oh, all righty. So tonight's reading, we have the same subheading throughout all the editions. It is called The Secret Vow, or The Secret Vows in the other editions. But in the CE, it is page 846, and the subheading is The Secret Vow. In the other editions, it's called The Secret Vows. In the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, it's chapter 28, part 6. In the Sparkle edition, it is page 659. And in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it is chapter 28, part 7. The Secret Vow, or Secret Vows. It really is just one vow, so I actually think the editing in the CE is a little bit more accurate because it's a secret. It's one vow. All right. We're going to dive in. who punishes the body is insane. For here the little gap is seen, and yet it is not here. It has not judged itself, nor made itself to be what it is not. By the way, I'm going to pause here for a moment. There's a very helpful footnote in the CE that clarifies that it, in this sentence and in this whole paragraph, is referring to the body. So keep that in mind as we read. And just a reminder, if you have any background noise, if you can mute your line by pressing star 6, that would be amazing. Thank you, thank you. All right, I'm going to start over again. Who punishes the body is insane. For here the little gap is seen, and yet it is not here. It has not judged itself, nor made itself to be what it is not. It does not seek to make of pain a joy and look for lasting pleasure in the dust. It does not tell you what its purpose is and cannot understand what it is for. It does not victimize because it has no will, no preferences, and no doubts. It does not wonder what it is, and so it has no need to be competitive. It can be victimized, but it cannot feel itself as victim. It accepts no role, but does what it is told without attack. So again, all of the it's in this paragraph are referring to the body. And this paragraph is essentially elaborating on the idea that the body is wholly neutral. It of itself is like an empty shell. And it is our mind, it's our decision to use the body lovelessly on behalf of the ego or miraculously on behalf of the Holy Spirit. That's our choice. But the body in and of itself is wholly neutral. So it's also saying, and it's going to actually say this later on in this section, that the body is the gap, essentially, that we are perceiving between us and our brother, that we are experiencing the body as this gap, as this separation between us and our fellow sons of God and God himself. So again, just to reemphasize, the body has not judged itself. It doesn't make itself what it is not. It doesn't seek to make of pain a joy. It doesn't look for pleasure in the dust. It does not tell you what its purpose is. It doesn't victimize. It doesn't have a will. It doesn't have preferences. It doesn't have doubts. Wow. So, I mean, if you feel into this, if the body has no preferences, what does it mean then when, for instance, I have a gluten sensitivity? I can go into some other allergies. We can all go into our own bodily ailments, our bodily quote-unquote preferences, where the body seems to dictate what we can and cannot do. But we have to remember always that the Course is teaching us that all of this is occurring at the level of the mind. We're making these choices that are witnesses for separation. It doesn't mean that the body is doing these things. It's the mind, and this it's the level, the mind is the level at which healing can occur. That's the only level at which true healing can occur. We can find bodily remedies, but they are temporary at best, and they're just like a leaky pipe, where if we find a remedy for one bodily ill, it's free to spring a leak in some other way, in some other sickness, until we're healing the core belief, which is that we believe that we are separate from God. So yeah, this whole paragraph can be summed up as the body is a wholly neutral thing. At least that's what I think. Any comments or questions before we go on? Let's dive into the next paragraph. It is indeed a senseless point of view to hold responsible for sight, a thing that cannot see, and blame it for the sounds you do not like, although it cannot hear. It suffers not the punishment you give, because it has no feeling. It behaves in ways you want, but never makes the choice. It is not born and does not die. It can but follow aimlessly the path on which it has been set. And if that path is changed, it walks as easily another way. It takes no sides and judges not the road it travels. It perceives no gaps because it does not hate. It can be used for hate, but it cannot be hateful made thereby. Okay, again, here is another paragraph just emphasizing that the body is a wholly neutral thing. How can we possibly hold the body responsible for seeing things it doesn't like when the body really can't see? It's a block to sight, actually. And we might want to blame it for sounds we don't like, and yet it's saying here it doesn't hear. Again, these are all choices that we're making at the level of mind. And the body the body was made through our decision to report back witnesses that prove that the body is real. So it's that closed loop system of what the body is when it's used on behalf of the ego, when it's used to try to keep us asleep. I'll highlight probably my favorite sentence in this paragraph is the sentence where it says, it is not born and it does not die. That clearly goes completely against the world, right? I mean, I know I have a friend who just birthed a baby, and we all know people who have passed away. It is not born, and it does not die. The body is not born, and the body does not die. How reassuring is that? I love that. Okay, I'm going to pause there and see. Anybody want to chime in? Any questions or comments or insights coming up so far?
This is John. Just that it's one of those things that I can accept intellectually from my studies or not, but to actually, you know, realize it and know that it's true, even though I can, you know, believe it, is one of the most difficult things I think we have to accomplish.
Absolutely, 100%. And as Paul said before, that's why we have the Holy Spirit. And that's literally why we do this work, because as we do this work, it's like we are laying one pebble at a time or one stone at a time in a new foundation that adds up over time. And so then we start to have experiences that show us that this is the truth, rather than, like you're saying, just believing it or knowing it intellectually. So I 100% agree with you that this is one of the hardest things to actually realize, but it comes gently as we engage with this work over and over and over, and that's why we have the Holy Spirit. Thank goodness. Thank you for that, John. That was really helpful.
I'm kind of in the same place as John in a lot of ways, just kind of like, I get it, but I don't. And then I was just thinking as we were reading, isn't there a place in the Course where it talks about the body wanting comfort?
Yeah.
So that
it
was kind
does.
Of confusing to me.
Well, I'd have to find that quote. I'm just doing my search thing really quick to see if I can find it. I think it says the body is in need of no comfort, I actually think.
Yeah, maybe it's that it doesn't need comfort, but somehow it makes us think that it does so that it proves that it's real or something. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. I'm just searching. I can't find the quote that I was thinking of, but I have a feeling it says something to the effect of that, like, the body is not in need of comfort, but yes, we interpret its impulses, and I think it even references reflexes. It might not be in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, and that's why. Wait, hold on. I think I found something. I was just looking for reflexes. It says, resistance to recognizing this is enormous because the existence of the world as you perceive it depends on the body being the decision maker. Terms like instincts, reflexes, and the like represent attempts to endow the body with non-mental motivators. So I have a feeling, yeah, I would have to do a little bit more digging, Paul, to try to find the quote that you're referring to, but I have a feeling it says that it actually doesn't, it's not in need, we as the Son of God are in need of comfort because we've terrorized and terrified ourselves, but the body isn't. And what you just said, I think, is very accurate. That it's very convincing. Otherwise, though, it's going to that it needs those things.
Yeah, it was just different. Sounded different to me. but it's like one of those things, just have to let it sink in, I think, and
yep.
It makes sense on some level, though.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm so sorry. I'm looking. I'm now like determined to find the quote that I was thinking of about comfort. What I did just find, I think this is the one that I was thinking of, and I don't think it's saying exactly what you were mentioning, but it's referring to the body in the Course in chapter 18. It says, "What plans do you make that do not involve its comfort or protection or enjoyment
yes.
in some way? This is the one. This makes yeah. the body an end and not a means in your interpretation. And this always means you still find sin attractive." So it isn't saying that the body, you know, needs comfort, but that everything we do, if you think about it, involves bodily comfort. And one of the best ways that I've seen this in my own experience is when I have to travel anywhere, even just like a short overnight trip, I'm like a pillow snob. I need my pillow. I need my earplugs so I don't hear anything. I want to make sure I'm warm enough. Like, am I going to have the right food? It all is involving trying
yeah.
to keep the body comfortable. And that is all to be turned to the Holy Spirit so we can learn that we can be in trust instead of having to, rely on our own definition of what that comfort is.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Corinne, this is Johnny. I get that too, but then I also think of how, like, in nature, there's been the experiment done with the monkey that, you know, will actually go to the furry thing rather than the
mm-hmm.
wiry thing that has food.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, with babies, too, you know, like in Romania, those that weren't held and comforted became,
mm-hmm.
had developed all kinds of, you know, antisocial behaviors and things like that. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I struggle with knowing that, like you say, we need to comfort ourselves, but it, you know, I know it's all in the mind, but like, how does it work in the mind of an infant? That was what confuses me.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a great question. I'm so glad you brought that up. So two things come to mind for me. First, what is that monkey going to, like, I know exactly the experiment that you're talking about, and I can't remember at the moment what it's called, but the monkey goes to, like, the cloth mother, the one that has padding on it, and it's just like a statue, and not the statue that's just like a wiry mother. I think that's where it gets its food. And then, you know, babies being comforted, what is that? But they're looking for love, you know, I'm going to hold my second point for a moment. I see that as that need for love. We need love. We flourish in love. That's exactly what it is that we are all looking for. Now, in the mind of an infant, you have to remember, this is where we have to even keep in mind that babies, they chose to come into this closed loop thought system also. We all made this choice to experience ourselves as bodies. And so so babies even are choosing for a, you know, bodily experience that is like that closed loop thought system too. So we've all made this choice. I think there was, I'm pretty sure it was Marianne Williamson, although I'm not sure. There was some teacher at some point that said something to the effect of, maybe she did say it, love is what we're born with, fear is what we learn here. And that's true in a sense, but just being born, we just read the body is not born. So if we perceive ourselves as being born, which we all do, we've already made that choice. What was her quote again that I just said? Fear is what we made here. We've already made a choice for fear. If we're perceiving our body, you know, that a body's even been born, we've on that pre-incarnation level, we had already made that choice for fear. So yes, those examples that you just gave, John, I think are great examples. I think it speaks to how much we need love. And so I see that almost more as love than like comfort of just like keeping the body comfortable, like, you know, if that makes any sense.
Oh, that's
but
great.
I definitely
Thank
see
you.
That,
that
as well.
Was a good, that was a really good explanation. I like that.
Okay. Yeah, we have to keep that in mind, too, that, you know, we didn't come in here with a blank slate. We already
right,
made that choice
yeah.
for fear. Or we wouldn't have come. We'd just be happy at home. Great input. Thank you so much. And I just want to emphasize before we keep reading that those sticky points of like, yeah, I get this in my head, but how do you actually learn this in practice? I love it when you all bring that up. It's really great because I know on some level we've all either been there or are currently there. So thank you for making those points. All right, paragraph number 3. The thing you hate and fear and loathe and want, the body does not know. You send it forth to seek for separation and be separate. And then you hate it, not for what it is, but for the uses you have made of it. You shrink from what it sees and what it hears and hate its frailty and its littleness. And you despise its acts, but not your own. It sees and acts for you. It hears your voice. And it is frail and little by your wish. It seems to punish you and thus deserve your hatred for the limitations which it brings to you. Yet you have made of it a symbol of the limitations which you want your mind to have and see and keep. There's a footnote here that I'll add in a sentence right smack almost in the middle of the paragraph. It says, you shrink from what it sees and what it hears and hate its frailty and its littleness, and you despise its acts, but not your own. The footnote right here says, despising the body's acts, which are seen as not your own, refers to despising behaviors that seem to be motivated by the body's instinctive drives, such as those for sex, food, or aggression, but these are really motivated by the mind. So there again, it's just this idea of taking it back to the mind. That's where all the impulses actually come from. And elsewhere in the course, earlier in the course in the CE, it talks about how impulses, like sexual impulses, are actually miracle impulses that are trying to get through. Those pure expressions of love that are trying to flow through us, but they're coming up through layers and layers of distortions, and therefore we experience those as those drives, sex being one of those. In this paragraph, I guess I'll just highlight that we've sent forth the body to seek for separation and be separate, so it abides, and then we hate it for that, but it's been a choice that we've made. We've assigned the body to be a witness to separation. It sees and acts for you, it hears your voice, and it is frail and little by your wish. It seems to punish you and thus deserve your hatred for the limitations which it brings to you, yet you have made of it a symbol of the limitations which you want your mind to have and see and keep. There is part of us, and we all, I feel like, I'll speak for myself, it's been a critical part of my journey to see and own all the ways in which I want to be separate, all the ways in which I love being Corinne, all the ways in which I fear that by waking up to love that I'm going to lose something or lose a sense of small self. So that's where this idea of responsibility has been so important to me, because for me to have glimpses of actually being able to clearly see that I'm choosing for littleness because I want to stay separate, that's where I can take my power back and make a new choice. I will pause there. Anything coming up for anyone?
That last part that you read, and it is frail and little by your wish, stood out to me a lot and reminded me a lot of like my personal experience with anxiety issues and how the mind will create these big things that aren't even real. And to me, it just, you know, it's when I was reading this, it's just like, whoa, like, it's like making you small in a lot of ways when that's not really who you are, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yes. Thank you for that. That's a great example with anxiety, that it yeah, it's clearly coming from our own mind, and it keeps us in that small sense of self. You just reminded me, Paul, and I don't know if I can make a good parallel here because I'm just going with this impulse that just came up, but I shared with you all like a year ago, I'm going to be releasing a podcast about this story because I never did, and I realized that I never did and wanted to. A year ago, my husband and I went to a very small retreat center in Western Massachusetts, and it was at this cabin. There's four cabins total at the retreat center that you can rent. It has no electricity, no running water. I don't know if this is ringing a bell for anybody, but we went there for a long weekend, and the first night that we were there, it was storming outside. There was a lot of rain. The windows in our one-room cabin didn't have curtains on them, and I had just filled up my mind leading up to this trip with getting on like a kick of watching spooky Halloween movies, and all the movies in some form involved people trying to like run out of the woods bleeding. So like I had all this junk, all these fear thoughts in my mind, and went into this experience with that fear. And so I was terrified the first night because I had to go to the bathroom and I didn't want to get up to go outside. I didn't want to wake up my husband. My imagination was going wild. And I feel like it speaks to what you were just saying, Paul, where it was clearly a choice for me to freak myself out. Like we're not passive recipients or passive victims of fear. It's something that can seem very much like we're the victim of it, that it just happened to us. But we have the power of decision. We literally have the power of decision to call on the Holy Spirit in those moments when we're terrified and to choose again, to learn a different lesson. I'm hearing some, is that you, Nicole? Did you want to add something?
Oh, I have that one part about the littleness and, I'm paraphrasing, identifying more with greatness and spirit. And I wanted to find out more about that a little bit. And I like your Halloween. I relate to that because it happened the other night here where the cat was making loud noises in the basement at 2 in the morning because he wanted to play. And I thought, oh, my God, it's an intruder. And I called on the Holy Spirit and about 5 minutes later, it was fine. And I had the courage to turn, to go and look, and everything was fine. So.
Awesome. Thank you. So, yeah, I can just say a few more words about, like, those terms, like, the frailty and littleness. Tell me if I'm getting this right, if I'm answering your question. But we've chosen to be in a body, to identify with the small self. Obviously, we can choose again. There's another way. That's why we're all here. But we've chosen for this, and yet we recognize, the ego recognizes that the body isn't good enough. It's not eternal. It's you know, subject to the quote-unquote laws of the world when we are identified with the ego. So the frailty comes in when, simply that, when we are identified as that small self and believe and follow those laws of the world, that littleness, we are in littleness when we are identified as that small self. And we are identified as that small self most of the time. That's nothing to feel guilty about at all, but it's something to recognize and to say, oh, look, Holy Spirit, yet again, here I am, in littleness, identifying as Corinne, and I'm willing to make another decision. I'm asking for a miracle instead. Does that answer your question?
It does, and it makes it so clear, and it answered other challenges I guess I've had with the body, and in those moments, now I have another way to go about it and ask for the Holy Spirit's guidance or to help me align with the Spirit instead of the body.
Yeah. And the Holy Spirit will always meet us where we are. So it's not like we have to suddenly stop identifying as a body because we can't intellectually do that. We can, you know, the lesson, I am not a body, I am free, can sound yep. like really pretty words. And they're just that. They're really pretty words until, as we really engage with this work, we start to have experiences of the truth of that. And it's those experiences that we can stand on. So, I just wanted to add that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Very helpful and clarifying. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Thank you so much. Anybody else have anything to add or ask? I think we're going to get through this whole section tonight, which is cool. All right. Anyone else? Let's read paragraph number 4. The body, at least it's paragraph number 4 in the CE. I'm not sure what paragraph number it is in the other edition. The body represents the gap. I referenced this earlier. The body represents the gap between the little bit of mind you call your own and all the rest of what is really yours. You hate it, yet you think it is yourself, and that without it, would yourself be lost. This is the secret vow that you have made with every brother who would walk apart. This is the secret oath you take again whenever you perceive yourself attacked. No one can suffer if he does not see himself attacked and losing by attack. Unstated and unheard in consciousness is every pledge to sickness. Yet it is a promise to another to be hurt by him and to attack him in return. Let's unpack this paragraph. So this first part of the paragraph, the body represents the little gap between the little bit of mind you call your own and all the rest of what is really yours. So this little bit of mind that we perceive that we have, that I know as Corinne and Corinne's mind, Corinne's consciousness, is a tiny little blip of the awareness of the mind that we are a part of and that we know. This is where I love out-of-body experiences so much, because when people have these experiences or near-death experiences, they always describe this greater understanding, this greater knowing that is way more vast than what we know now. We've shared the example of Anita Morjani on this call before, where Anita Morjani speaks about how when she was having her near-death experience, it was as if one of the ways that she described it is that right now, it's as if we're in this gigantic black room and we have a tiny little flashlight and we're just looking around at one little aspect of what we can see underneath that small flashlight. But when she was out of her body, it was as if the lights went on in this huge, vast warehouse and she was aware, you know, of just so much more. So the body represents this gap between this tiny little flashlight of a mind that we call our own and the rest of what is really ours, this gigantic warehouse that, to use her example, that we're in. So there's part of us that hates the body, because I said already that the ego recognizes that it's not good enough. It doesn't last forever. It's got some issues from time to time. Yet you think that we've identified with it. We think it's ourself, and that without it, ourself would be lost. That's where, for me and my own experience, a lot of my fear came up, because I was afraid that without my body, that I wouldn't be anymore, that myself would be lost. And the Course is saying over and over again, the Course is saying over and over again that that's not the case. And everybody who has experienced near-death experiences comes back and reports the same thing. I love Roger Ebert of Siskel and Ebert. I love his quote that he said when he started to make his transition out of the body. He came to and he said to his wife, "This is all an elaborate hoax." And I just have so loved that. Those words have stayed with me. So this is the secret vow that you have made with every brother who would walk apart. This is the secret oath we take again whenever we perceive ourselves attacked. We are reaffirming an oath that we made with one another to affirm the separation, to affirm that we are separate from each other, to agree silently that somebody's got to suffer if someone else is attacked, that attack and defense has got to stay in place. And the sentence, unstated and unheard in consciousness, is every pledge to sickness. I circled this sentence when I was reading it because I wanted to initially think that that word would be unconsciousness, like in the unconscious. But this is saying that it's unstated and unheard in consciousness is every pledge to sickness. So there's something in our mind, there's a conscious decision on some level that feels very unconscious, that we're making a choice for separateness, which in icky terms is a pledge to sickness. It's a promise to be hurt by another. Excuse me, it's a promise to another to be hurt by him and to attack him in return. So it's a promise to keep the attack-defense cycle going. So, okay, let's get concrete for a moment. I have shared many times on the calls how I have some challenging relationships in my family. And a cycle of attack-defense was going on for eons with, let's use one particular family member as an example. And it was our silent agreement to keep that going, to keep that attack-defense relationship going, because that kept both of us identified as Corinne and the other person. It kept both of us in our small sense of self. Until I don't know what this other person was doing, because I know that they're not a course student, but I had had enough. I'm sure they had enough of this pattern as well. And I started saying, in the middle of being attacked by this other individual, I started saying in my mind, help me, Holy Spirit, like show me how to respond. I'm willing to not attack back. I'm willing to do something differently. And that was the beginning. It didn't happen overnight, but the beginning of a very big healing that has occurred between me and this other individual. I'm not saying there's not still little blips that come up here and there, but it's by far different than it used to be. So that to me is what this paragraph is saying. We are silently agreeing to keep attack and defense in place. We make a silent pledge to sickness to affirm that we are separate. And it's up to us in any given circumstance to choose again, to turn to the Holy Spirit, to not keep that silent oath any longer. I will pause there. Anything coming up for anybody so far? That makes sense, or is that hard to follow?
I think it totally made sense.
Good. Yeah, I think it does too. I mean, just the teaching, it makes a lot of sense to me, and it's made a lot of difference in breaking that attack-defense cycle to experience healing.
Ditto, yeah.
And, you know, that attack-defense cycle, it can still be that the ego is screaming in your head to attack, like, defend yourself, you know, you're the innocent one. And that voice doesn't necessarily disappear, but we get stronger and stronger in our conviction of choosing to not listen to that.
I want to thank you for pointing out that consciousness, that even though we don't hear it or state it, if it's at in a conscious level, that it's still happening there too. Because I always thought, well, that's just happening in our subconscious, or, you know, I agree to get sick or whatever it is, or like you say, attack or defend.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks.
Thank you for highlighting that, because honestly, that was surprising to me. Like, I literally, when I read that sentence a couple hours ago in preparation for our call, I was like, wow, that does not say unconscious. That says consciousness, which means that it's in our consciousness, but it's unstated and unheard. And I thought that was pretty big, too. So thank you for highlighting that again. And that can be really, like, a downer to hear, and it can also be very offensive. This is why it's just so unloving to take these teachings and to, like, slap them on somebody else. Like, to say to somebody who's sick, oh, this is a choice in your consciousness. Like, that's, I think, one of the meanest things that one person, one spiritual student can do to another, and it's not helpful. I think this is something that we all have to come to on our own. Okay, next paragraph, paragraph number 5. Sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. And actually, I'm going to pause here for a moment. I'm hearing some airiness. Nicole, it actually might be your vine, if you wouldn't mind.
I shall mute. No worries.
Okay,
sorry.
Thank you. No problem. Thank you so much, hon. Okay. Sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. You know what? I need to read that a third time. Sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. Wow. It is the obvious effect of what was made in secret, in agreement with another's secret wish to be apart from you, as you would be apart from him. Unless you both agree this is your wish, it can have no effect. I want to highlight this one more time. Unless you both agree this is your wish, it can have no effect. Whoever says, there is no gap between my mind and yours, has kept God's promise, not his tiny oath to be forever faithful unto death. And by his healing, is his brother healed? Let this be your agreement with each one, that you be one with him and not apart. And he will keep the promise that you make with him, because it is the one which he has made to God, as God has made to him. So this first sentence is kind of a jaw-dropper. Sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. I think that's pretty clear, so I don't have anything to say about that. That's a big one, though. And again, it's no cause for guilt. That's just, I really want to emphasize that. Everything that we've said tonight, everything that the Course teaches, everything that we're ever saying on these calls, it's always important to remember that none of this is a cause for guilt. This is about undoing guilt. If we're feeling guilty at all on any level, on any tiny little minute level, that's just the ego trying to get in there again and take hold. It's important that we see it for what it is and call on the Holy Spirit, hand it over immediately. So sickness is the obvious effect of what was made in secret, in agreement with another's secret wish to be apart from him. So if you take a relationship, let's say two people, and silently we've had an agreement to be separate. That person is going to be separate from us. We're going to be separate from them. That's been our silent agreement. We both have to agree in this for something to have effect. But as soon as one of them decides to say, there is no gap between my mind and yours, one of them is keeping God's promise, not that tiny oath to be forever faithful to separation, to death. And by this, we're calling upon healing for our own mind, and we are thus allowing healing to come forward for that other person as well. So let this be our agreement with every brother, that we be one with him and not apart. I think we said that a few weeks ago, affirming that there's no gap between us. That's our small part that we can play in all of our relationships with all of our brothers, no matter what the picture may be. I love the sentence, there is no gap between my mind and yours, and we're keeping God's promise. Isn't that beautiful? And I'll pause. We have one paragraph left. So any comments or questions?
A quick question, and it might be too much of a tangent, but it goes from like sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. And I totally get that. Like even in my own life, I've seen how that happens. And then the paragraph starts to talk about, with someone else, and it brings like someone else into the picture. So it goes from the first sentence is kind of like when you're angry in general, it affects your health. And then it starts talking about someone else too. So I was just a little confused about that.
Yeah, Paul, that's a really great observation. And so as I read this, sickness is anger taken out upon the body so that it will suffer pain. Kind of the bridge is this next sentence. It's the obvious effect of what was made in secret in agreement with another secret wish to be apart from you. So even in that sickness being anger taken out upon the body, we all have relationships that we're in where we are affirming the separation. And so it's actually linking sickness being anger taken out upon the body. It's not something even in isolation. It's something that, again, all of us here, seemingly in bodies, are having this secret agreement to be separate from each other. And it's that choice to be separate from each other. It's that decision or that wish to be separate from one another that creates the sickness. So that's how I see the bridge, that although it sounds like it's just addressing, you know, one body, that sickness is anger taken out upon the body, that we can sort of trace it to a wider cause coming from our decision to be separate from one another, which we can end the moment that we decide that there's no gap between our mind and everyone else's mind.
That makes sense. Go ahead.
I was just saying, even if you're not in a relationship, you know, where there's someone there constantly, we're always in relationships with other people in the world in one way or another.
Absolutely.
We're not here alone.
100%. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a relationship with our brothers in every way, shape, and form. Strangers, brothers on the TV, in the news.
Yeah, when you made that bridge, when you bridged it, then my like psychology mind started coming on and too. And it's, you know, we're relational beings, so it totally makes sense. So this really is speaking to that to me now.
Yeah. This, and I love too. I mean, part of what has really opened, or I should say, my eyes have really opened much more now than ever before to that relational aspect of A Course in Miracles, which I feel like for many years, because I was suffering with so much anxiety, which was so just, you know, focused on me, I was just focused on wanting relief and not so much seeing the interpersonal nature of this. That was there, but it wasn't like, you know, wow to me. And now it's like, wow, we need our brothers. We literally don't wake up alone. I love that sentence. There is no gap between my mind and yours. Everybody on this call and listening to this call, there is no gap between our minds. Yay. Let's feel into that. I just heard someone. Who is that? Was somebody going to say something? Maybe somebody's on mute? If you wanted to say something, you're still on mute. Oh, I hear somebody now. Nope, you're gone again. Feel free to chime in if anybody has anything you want to add. Oh, okay, let's read the next paragraph, final paragraph of this section. God keeps his promises. His son keeps his. In his creation did his father say, "You are beloved of me and I of you forever. Be you perfect as myself, for you can never be apart from me." His son remembers not that he replied, "I will," though in that promise he was born. Yet God reminds him of it every time he does not share a promise to be sick, but lets his mind be healed and unified. His secret vows are powerless before the will of God, whose promises he shares. And what he substitutes is not his will, but made promise of himself to God. I love that. These quotes in this paragraph, that God, in our creation, God said, Be you as perfect as myself, for you can never be apart from me. And we said, I will, and we were born. And every time that we choose to not be sick, to not share a promise to be sick, but let our mind be healed and unified, God reminds us of that. And those secret vows are powerless. Vow or vows, I guess we could say plural vows, because there's a couple different ways we could state it. Wonderful. So we made it through this section, and we have 5 minutes left. Does anybody have anything you'd like to add or share about any sentences that stand out to you, any insights, examples?
I just want to add one thing to that, because, excuse me, it can be confusing, where it says in that promise he was born, or previously it says we're not born and we never die. So, but I think I would just add born eternally.
Yes, thank you. Exactly. It's not referring to being born in a body.
Right.
We were born in thought, in heaven. God extended us in love the moment we said, I will. So yes, that's not as a body. Thank you so much for highlighting that. This is how the course can get so confusing until we kind of start to get used to it. It teaches on different levels, and you don't always know when it's talking about, you know, what level. So that's part of the reason why I think it can be confusing. So thank you for that. Super helpful. Anyone else?
I was just going to say, for that last paragraph that we just read, I just kept getting this message that healing is possible. And I mean, even though I read the course, it all comes down to your mind and the choice to heal. Mm-hmm. And that I just have to not identify with sickness, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's it. And
Grace,
yeah,
and
that's it. Not identifying with sickness. Not identifying with sickness is everything. And yet we'll see, and we do see, you know, when we decide not to identify with sickness anymore, then how tempting it is to go back. that's temptation, is to constantly be tempting us to identify with littleness, with sickness, with frailty. And that's where our work comes in. That's where the rubber hits the road, and that's where we are asked to be active as miracle workers. This is not a passive course. Not at all. All right. Nicole, thank you. Paul, John, everybody who is here holding the space and sharing and listening and just being here. Thank you, thank you. I love you all, and I will see you next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Love you, too.
Thank you.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Good night. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.